Yes, I love it.
Sweet, he's giving me 300 boxes of grape nuts flakes.
Friends anybody ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all the time.
I love music, good music, but not swing. I sing.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Each week, we will dive into a certain star and talk to some people who know much about him. I'm Kate, your host, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Today's episode is Audrey Hepburn, and today we will be talking with Megan, a researcher on Audrey Hepburn. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Megan!
Hi!
Hi, welcome to the podcast!
Thank you so much for having me. This is an amazing opportunity.
Oh, well, thank you so much for, like, messaging me and saying, hey, do you want to talk about Audrey? And I'm like, absolutely, sis. Nobody's offered to yet, so why don't we?
That's what I was worried about, because I was like, somebody's going to get to her eventually. You know, I was thinking she'd be one of the first people, you know, somebody would talk about.
Right, and no, nobody's actually offered to talk about Audrey Hepburn yet. And I was like, I can't actually imagine anybody else talking about her but you.
Oh my god, that's so sweet of you to say.
So I was like, very well, like, I was so excited when you were like, can we do Audrey? And I'm like, yes, let's do it. So you probably know more about Audrey than I do.
Oh my goodness. I'll tell you everything I know.
Yes. So without further ado, why don't you start when and where she was born?
Okay. Well, she was born on May 4th in 1929. And forgive me if the pronunciation is not good. Mm-hmm. But Elsen, Brussels in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents were Joseph Victor Anthony Rustin. That was like her maiden name. And mm-hmm. her mother was the Baroness Ella Van Hinstra. And they were married in 1926, so about 3 years before she was born. And mm-hmm. she actually had two older stepbrothers. Her mother was married previously and had two children from that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And those brothers were, I think, 12 and 15 years older than she was.
Oh my god.
Yes. So, but she was the only child from that marriage.
Hmm. Do you know anything about her childhood?
Oh, yeah. For the most part, it was, in the beginning anyway, you know, very private and sheltered. She mm-hmm. was very close to her father,
mm-hmm.
and not as much with her mother. Her mother was very reserved and not the type of person to necessarily give out affection all the time,
mm.
which was something that Audrey kind of thrived on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was six, her parents divorced. Her father actually left.
Oh.
And yeah, she was heartbroken by that, severely heartbroken by that. I think she referred to it as like one of the most traumatic moments of her life. And it kind of carried on into her adult life. She needed to be loved, and, you know, she sought that in her marriages, mm-hmm. and, you know, she would also, she had a big heart, obviously, you know,
mm-hmm.
loved her children more than anything, and so yeah. that kind of carried on into her adult life. You know, she didn't want, you know, mm-hmm. her kids to sort of have that same experience. I mean, even though, like, both of her marriages did end up in divorce, I mean, that love was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she was a kid, she took ballet lessons, and that was, I think that started at the onset of the war, and during World War II anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And World War II did not treat her kindly by any means, not mm-hmm. that it treated anybody kindly, but mm-hmm. She would perform like secret ballet performances to raise money for the underground war effort.
Oh.
And yeah, it was really interesting. They were called, I think, silent performances, because nobody was allowed to applaud or anything, you know, for fear of being discovered. But she did that, and she also volunteered at a hospital. And then towards the end of the war, like, Germany, you know, controlled the food supply, mm-hmm. and, you know, as she got older, you know, she wasn't able to develop like most kids normally would have because of that, you know, strict, oh, what's the word?
Strict diet?
Well, because, you know, Germany and the Germans, they, you know, sort of cut off the food supply. She wasn't able to get the nutrition she needed.
Oh, so rations.
Yeah, rations. And she became very malnourished mm. and resulted in multiple health complications. So she did not have a very normal childhood. I mean, in the beginning, I'd say before the war, but once the war came, it definitely changed things. She had to grow up very quickly.
Mm. Yeah. Didn't she go to ballet school?
Yeah, she did. She went to a couple of different ballet schools. That was her dream for a very long time. I mean, that's what she wanted to do initially, was to be a ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
And, but after the war, she wanted to continue that pursuit of becoming a ballerina, but she was told by professionals that, I guess because of the training she received, and, you know, it wasn't very frequent in the war,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it wasn't normal, obviously, because of the circumstances,
mm-hmm.
she lacked, like, the proper technique, you know, mm-hmm. to perform properly, you know, that was required of dancers, you know, of prima status, and she was too tall. She mm-hmm. was 5'7".
Oh, wow.
It makes me sad now, because I think people would be a bit more accepting of her in the ballet world now,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to back then. So I'm like, oh, if she was around now, I mean, she'd be gracing all the stages, doing every kind of ballet.
Oh, my and God. The performances I could imagine. I would be getting a ticket for that. If she were here,
oh, yeah.
and she was still doing ballet, or at least teaching ballet, yes, my ass would have been in that class, and I would have definitely taken class from her. Because I know she was talented. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And she was talented in so many different ways. It wasn't until I bought her son's book about her, Sean's book.
Oh, yes. Audrey Remembered?
Mm-hmm. It's
And
Audrey Hepburn, An Elegant Spirit.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I just love that book so much.
It's easily my favorite book about her. There are some pictures that I had never seen until I purchased the book of, like, drawings that she would do as a child, and mm-hmm. you know, up until then I didn't know that she drew, but she was quite talented. I mean, she would do little cartoons and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and there was a like a charcoal sketch of her mother that was, I mean, you wouldn't think that a child drew it. It was that good.
I know, oh my God.
But she was talented in so many different ways. Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me, just mm-hmm. the extent of her talent. But yeah, like you, I definitely would be seeing her in just any performance she was in.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about her early career, because I know that she had a small career on Broadway.
Yeah, so after she was told that she really wouldn't be able to reach professional status as a ballerina, she began to pursue acting. Mm-hmm. She even said in an interview, oh, I'm trying to think, it was probably the late 80s, she said she had never even, you know, necessarily wanted to be an actress, not in that sense, and like, you know, the Hollywood film sense.
Mm-hmm.
But she started acting on stage. She was a chorus girl in a couple of different productions, like High Button Shoes and Sauce Tartare.
Mm-hmm.
And she had done a short film, like an educational film called Dutch and Seven Lessons, right after the war.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere. It's a very brief video, but you get to see a very young Audrey looking very adorable and telling you how to speak in Dutch, you know?
Yeah.
And So she had some small roles in musicals, and she eventually, you know, got an agent, and mm-hmm. she started doing British films. I think she did some BBC TV work.
No.
And then she was in she had very small roles, like, you know, a cigarette girl or, you know, mm-hmm. a hat check girl, things of that sort, and like Lavender Hill Mob and mm-hmm. Young Wives Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got this role in this movie called The Secret People, and it wasn't a terribly big role, but she was able to dance in that role. So it's interesting to see that part, you know, shown on film, because you can definitely see how much she flourished and how much she enjoyed herself just dancing. It really shows. You could just see it on her face.
Mm.
So, but, and then, while she was filming Monte Carlo Baby, she was brought to the attention of the novelist Colette.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she spotted her, and she wanted to have, I think it was lunch or tea with her. And I think as soon as she saw her, she was like, that's my Gigi. Because she, you know, wrote the play Gigi, and mm-hmm. she just immediately, from the onset, wanted Audrey in the leading role.
Yeah, because so. Leslie Caron did it for film, I know.
Mm-hmm, in the late 50s, yeah. She mm-hmm. did the musical version.
Ugh, yeah.
That's something I wish I had footage of, just Gigi with her in it. It would have been so amazing.
Yes. I've seen publicity photos, and she looks adorable.
Oh, yeah, and, like, the little pink robe. It's so cute.
Oh. Audrey is, like, great in anything, so I will take it. I mean...
Oh, yeah. She can pull anything off.
So she does this play, and mm-hmm. so when does she get discovered? Because doesn't she get signed by Paramount, or is it 20th Century Fox? Who does she get signed by?
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Well, what had happened was her agent, I think it was during her run in Gigi, was like, hey, there's this movie that's about to go into production called Roman Holiday.
Yes.
And they had her audition for that. I'm trying to think of who she was signed by. I can't remember it for the life.
I want to say it was Paramount.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Let me look that up and see.
I feel awful. I can't remember it. But
that's okay. It was either Paramount or 20th Century Fox. It was either one of the two.
I think, yeah, Paramount seems to be ringing a bell to me. And, but her agent was like, hey, there's this movie called Roman Holiday that's about to go into production, and they want an unknown. Because mm-hmm. originally, I want to say they wanted Elizabeth Taylor for the role,
which
I think would be very interesting. I can't really see her playing that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I think it was Gene Simmons who had wanted the role very badly.
Yeah.
And then Audrey got it, and she was livid. I remember reading, I think she...
Paramount. It was Paramount.
Yeah. I thought so. And then I think Gene Simmons approached her after the premiere or something, or maybe it was the Oscars, I can't remember which, and she was like, I wanted to hate you, but I just couldn't.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, because I heard that Gene Simmons wanted the role of Roman Holiday in Roman Holiday, but I don't think that 20th Century Fox would lend her out.
So yeah.
I think there was some conflict and reasons why. I think Emily probably would know the reason why. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right.
But...
we've talked about both of them on a couple of occasions, and she had mentioned, you know, it's such a shame they never played sisters on film.
Oh, I know.
So very similar in different ways.
Mm-hmm. They looked very much alike.
Yes. But, so she got a screen test for Roman Holiday. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, she had read a couple of scenes. But then they let the cameras rolling and interviewed her mm-hmm. to get, like, a more natural feel. Because she hadn't, you know, really done anything terribly extensive in film up until that point.
Yeah.
And she discussed, you know, her experiences during the war. And it was very interesting. Just, you know.
And then she cut her hair, too, didn't she? Or is that a different screen test?
Oh, that was, I think, for costumes and stuff when she was trying on different, you know, costumes. I think she was just fiddling with the scissors and things like that.
Oh.
It's so cute. I love it.
Oh, she's adorable. I think.
Oh, yeah.
Rowan Holiday is a smash success. Gets her first Oscar nomination. I mean, how many actors and actresses can you say are nominated for their first movie role? I mean, how many?
I have no idea.
Probably not. Probably not a lot.
It's a pretty rare occurrence, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody who's relatively unknown just goes into their first big production. Oh, here's an Oscar. You were that wonderful.
Oh, my God. What's your thoughts on it?
Oh, my God. Well, it's such... I mean, I think she deserved it, obviously. I mean, I'm a bit biased, but I think...
You can be biased, girl. It's Audrey. I mean, absolutely. She becomes this global icon overnight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's definitely sort of a Cinderella story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Her whole life is sort of the Cinderella story. She starts off, you know, in the war and, you know, just things couldn't look any more bleak. And then, you know, her dreams as a dancer are crushed. And then she goes to, you know, become this legendary actress, which she didn't even want to do initially. But I love Roman Holiday. I don't think that was the first Audrey Hepburn movie I saw, but I definitely remember loving it from the get-go. I remember my dad had bought me this... it was like one of those DVD collections that had a couple of her movies. He was like,
yeah, absolutely. I know what you're talking about. It had like Roman Holiday, Sabrina, and Funny Face in it.
And he was
That's
like,
what I had.
I think you'll really like her. I was probably about 10 or 11 at the time.
I was 6 when I found out who she was. I was very young.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, from the get-go, I like fell in love. I mean, she was just so amazing in that role. You know, even in that sort of a Cinderella story, you see that in a couple of her films, that sort of Cinderella story arc. But Roman Holiday, it's such a great sort of like introductory film for her.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, she gets this movie role. She gets to play opposite Gregory Peck, who is the who was lent out actually to Paramount to do the movie.
Right.
He had no idea who she was, but he just adored her. And the two of them became, like, BFFs.
I know. I love their friendship so much. It's just so precious to read about. And I think I was actually watching a documentary about Gregory Peck the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the billing for Roman Holiday, how they were, you know, going to have Gregory Peck in Roman Holiday.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, and introducing Audrey Hepburn, like, little tiny at the bottom.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, no, no. She needs to be with me, you know, in the billing before the movie, the movie title, you know. He was that confident that she was going to be so successful with that film. And, you know, he was right.
Yeah. I remember when I met him, we...
Oh my God, you met him?
Yes. I was 12.
I had no idea. That's amazing.
Yes. When I met him, I didn't get the chance to, like... Well, when I met him, it was very brief. So when I met him, it was like... So I'll just tell this little story. But we were there on a field trip, and we were watching him talk. And there was a question asked by somebody, and they asked, you know, what was Audrey Hepburn like? And he had just the nicest things to say about her. Mm-hmm. And it was so sweet. But when I met him, I managed to go backstage. I don't know. There was no security back then. I don't know how I managed to get back there. But I managed
You're
to get back there.
A little more lenient to a 12-year-old going backstage, too.
Yeah. And so I ran backstage somehow. Like, my class was going one way. I went the other. I was like, I've got to meet him. I got to get married to this man today. And I went backstage. I managed to find his dressing room. He was in there. And I went in backwards. So I kind of, like, I went for my, like... I walked in backwards, so I, because I was like, okay, I got to make sure nobody's following me so they don't, like, throw me out.
Yeah, right.
And he was like, well, hello there. And I was like, Mr. Peck, we gotta go. I left the pastor here. We gotta go. And he was like, where are we going? I'm like, we're getting married. And he's like, but I'm already married. And I was like,
oh my God.
And it just crushed my little 12-year-old heart. And I was like, no. And he was like, well, come here. And he was like, I'll give you a signed photo and a big hug. How does that sound? And I'm like, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
And I still have that signed photo to this day. Like, it's, oh, my God, it's mine. But anyway, back to Audrey. But he was so confident that she was going to get the Oscar. Like, he was campaigning for her. Because when you're nominated for an Oscars, usually it's your team people that can campaign for you. It's a lot of behind-the-scenes work. Mm-hmm. As Tim Barker, Susan Hayward's son, had explained to me. So he did a lot of campaigning for her. He was like, listen, this is her first movie. I know, but she's so, like, she's dead ass bomb in it. And you gotta give her this Oscar. So Oscar night in like the 50s, I'm not sure what year this was.
This would have been, let me think. Roman Holiday was 1953.
So must have been 54.
I think so.
Okay, so in the 1954 Oscars, she's sitting there, and they're like, Audrey Hepburn, and it's like, oh, whoa!
Yeah, it's insane. And you can, her Oscar, you know, speech is just so precious.
Oh, she's adorable.
Yeah, of course, you know, she's so overwhelmed, and, you know, talking about how touched she is, and it's just, it's so amazing to watch, you know, she's literally just emerging into this scene, like, literally out of nowhere, basically, and it's just so wonderful, and I remember, I can't remember where I read this, it's in one of the books that I have about her, but after she was given the Oscar, she went to the bathroom, whatever, to powder her nose, and she left her Oscar in there. Which I just think is so Audrey, you know, she's just so overcome that she literally forgets her award in the bathroom, so she has to go back, retrieve it, and there's a picture of her with her Oscar, and she's just like, oh, got it back.
Yes. She's so cute.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely adorable. And, you know, she could just play it so well, and just, you know, she was so versatile, because, you know, she could be, you know, sweet and adorable, but she could do so many other things too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just crazy. It's baffling to me, you know, how versatile she is, seeing her in so many different roles. You know, of course there's that traditional, you know, I guess the Audrey that the public remembers in movies like Roman Holiday and Funny Face.
Yes, but, you know, which we'll get into, because those movies are bomb, and I'm telling you, like, she's natural. She's so good. How could you not love her?
She's a natural, which is just amazing because, you know, up until then, she had never had any film experience, not really, like, terribly professional. Mm-hmm. And when she did, you know, she was just on screen for a moment, had a little line, had a smile, and then would leave.
But
she was a natural. And just everything she did. She never really looked out of place in any of those films.
No. So she goes on and she makes Sabrina, another smashing success for Paramount. I mean, Paramount's really banking on her. They're like, well, you have the Oscar. I guess we might as well make you Sabrina with Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
Which is a really weird pairing.
It's weird
because he's like old. And she's, like, so young. She's, like, in her 20s, and he's, like, in his 50s. And I'm like, this is just uncomfortable for me to watch. And he's supposed to be in love with her. And I'm like, this is so uncomfortable.
That's such a common theme at that time, though. You see it so much, where it's just, you know, the actress is significantly younger than the leading actor.
I know. But,
yeah. He was considerably older than her, and he had just finished making The King Mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, in that movie, his character is, like, you know, insane.
Yeah. Oh, my
very
God.
Very gruff, very mean, very unhinged. So he comes on to Sabrina, you know, this lighthearted you know, rom-com, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of, I don't want to say they clash a little bit, but he isn't as used to being around somebody who's so, you know, I mean, she was inexperienced at the time. This was, yeah, like her second, you know,
yeah,
big film. So he was like, you know, we had to do a million takes with her and yada, yada, yada. And I was just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Such a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, you should be thanking her that she's making your career.
Yeah.
Like, she's made your career blossom, because your career was on the decline, sir. So, you know what? You should be thanking her that she's helping you get your career. Well, I think this is one of his later films before he dies.
Yeah, I want to say he died about, that was 1954. I think he died about 3 or 4 years afterwards.
Yeah.
So it was definitely towards the end of his life.
Yeah.
Know? He,
yeah,
wasn't as big as he was, obviously, in the 40s with movies like, you know, The Maltese Falcon. And
yeah.
Yeah. But in that film, she met William Holden.
Yes.
So she was enamored with him and he was with her. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading in a biography, the author was like, it's kind of hard to write about Audrey Hepburn because she didn't do anything like scandalous.
No.
At all.
No.
With the exception of this little, like, affair that they had. Because William Holden was, you know, married at the time. I think they may have been separated, but I think legally he was still married or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but they were madly in love. I mean, just, like, head over heels in love. But, she got to see, like, another side of him, you know, at the time. He was an alcoholic, and she got to see that side of him and just decided it wouldn't be wise to go down that road.
No. And then she makes, I think, one of her most iconic films, because in 2000 and, God, when did this come out? It was a commercial and they sold her line from this movie, from Funny Face.
Oh.
2003, I want to say?
Gap commercial?
Yes, and Gap. Now, let me tell you something about Gap, because I saw this commercial and I was like, you know what, Mom? We are going down to the mall. And they had her line from that scene. They had it and you could buy it.
Yes.
Her clothes, like the turtleneck and the pants. And I was like, you know what, Mom? I am going to Gap. I don't care if it doesn't fit me. Yes. And I was like, I am buying these clothes and I am doing this. I'm going to do it. And my mom was like, oh, God. And, you know, I had to wear like a zero pants because nothing fit me at the time. Oh. And I had to wear like a small turtleneck, but I bought it. And so she makes Funny Face with Kay Thompson and Fred Astaire. And Fred Astaire was, again, loaned out to Paramount from MGM. Kay Thompson, I think, worked at Paramount.
Mm.
So she makes this movie, smashing success. It really showcases her feature as a dancer.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons why I love it so much. Because you just see her light up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell she was really enjoying herself when she was making this movie. I remember reading she was originally very nervous, obviously, because she would be dancing with Fred Astaire, you know.
Yeah.
Easily one of the greatest dancers, you know, of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, immediately just relieved all of her fears and was like, you know, it's just dancing, you know?
Yeah, and he was so nice to her.
Oh, yeah. Such a nice guy.
He was, like, and I can't wait to talk to his daughter at some point. I need to get around to doing that.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. I need to get around to doing that because I found his daughter, and I need to get around to doing that and being like, so, tell me about your dad. But
all the wonderful things about your father.
Please.
details.
Yes, he was so good to all of his co-stars. Like, even if, like, he thought they were inexperienced and didn't want to work with them, he still was so patient with them.
He just made it, you know, a happy working environment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He definitely didn't make it feel like work.
Yeah, he wasn't a Gene Kelly, that's for sure. I'm going to diss Gene Kelly for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He wasn't making his co-stars cry, and he wasn't making them feel uncomfortable. So, you know what? Mm-hmm. He was making them feel like they were great stars. And he was like, you know what, girl, you got this. And she was like, you know what, Fred, I know. And he was like, you know what, you're amazing. And she was like, you know what, I know. So...
Yeah. But they do that together, and their chemistry, I mean, even in spite of, like, the age difference, once mm-hmm. again, I mean, it's just amazing, especially when they dance, because she is just so natural in it, and she looks so good dancing with him.
Yes.
And, you know, once again, you could just tell she is enjoying herself immensely.
Yeah, she's in her element.
Mm-hmm, definitely in her element. It's just so interesting seeing, you know, these little tidbits, you know, where you can see just her inner dancer come out, which obviously, you know, makes me, like, cry.
Yes. Yes. Because you're a dancer yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're so good.
Oh. I wouldn't say that, but she definitely, you know, I look up to her in some respects, you know, well, obviously in a ton, but especially, you know, with dancing and things like that, you know.
Yes.
Even when it didn't become her initial, or it didn't become her, you know, end goal, you know, she didn't let that deter her
mm-hmm.
from moving forward and becoming more successful, and just, you know, just whatever happened in her life, she didn't let it faze her, and that's what I love about her.
Yeah. So she makes Funny Face. It's an instant success. I mean, makes Paramount a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, like, catapults her to stardom even more, because, I mean, she's working with Fred Astaire. She's working with Kay Thompson. I mean, she's got this amazing cast. I mean, she's becoming an icon. She's got this iconic scene where she dances in a nightclub. It becomes a Gap commercial in, like, 2002. I mean, you know what? I'm going to see something real quick. I'm going to see what year was that. Because she's actually in a lot of commercials these days.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember when that, like, chocolate commercial came out.
Yes. And I was like, my mom literally had to pause the TV. And she's like, honey, come here. And I was like, what? She's like, look who's in the commercial. And I was like, what?
And the technology they did to make it, you know, literally look like she just came back to life. You know,
yes.
She just walked off the set of Roman Holiday and did this commercial.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember seeing that and just being blown away. And,
yeah.
You know, Moon River playing in the background. And I'm like, ah, oh, this is so amazing.
Oh, I know. And I think it was released in, like, we'll talk about the Audrey Hepburn commercial, because I do want your opinion on that, because I don't know how much I don't know how much they paid, because whenever you have to use Audrey, you have to go through her children. Like, you have to.
Oh, definitely.
Especially Sean. I think Sean is the executor of the estate.
Yeah, Sean's definitely the one who's mainly in control of all those things.
Yeah, because I don't know, I don't think Luca is anything, really. I mean, Sean is, like, every time I see Audrey's name, it says Sean Ferrer.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce his last name, is Ferrer?
I've heard people say Ferrer and Ferrar. I kind of switch between them.
Okay, so it's fine. We'll just mispronounce his name for publicity purposes. It's all good.
But, yeah, Luca, he's not as involved as Sean is.
I think
he wrote a book somewhat recently about her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a mixture of a little biography and a cookbook.
Yes, Audrey at Home.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful book. I was going to buy it. My mom, I don't know if my mom bought it. I don't know if she bought it or not. But I was going to buy it, but I ended up not. But I really want to buy it and start cooking, but and just make all these recipes made by Audrey. So anyway, we're going on in her filmography. And so then she makes Love in the Afternoon. And I'm going to just say this now. I love Gary Cooper. However, he is like 80 years old, and he is like in her 30s, and I'm like, this chemistry is so uncomfortable. I'm sorry.
It definitely is. In terms of chemistry, it's not that great.
It's not there.
Yeah, it definitely not as, it doesn't stand up as well as, you know, Sabrina or, you know, Funny Face, you know, other films where she had these, like, older co-stars, but it was still a good movie.
It is. It's adorable. I'm not gonna lie. It's bomb. Mm-hmm. It's cute. I'm like, aw, he's like in love with her, and I'm like, but aren't you like 50?
It's like, aren't you old enough to be your father?
Yeah. That again. I talked to Maria, Gary's daughter, about this. And I said, I love your dad, I do, but there are some movies where I just cannot watch him in. And she goes, oh, really? And I'm like, yes, Love in the Afternoon is one. That chemistry is just way too uncomfortable, way too uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I'm just dying.
Wooden. Yeah.
I'm just like, sis, what? Paramount was like, well, we'll just team her with anybody, really. Let's just team her with somebody who's dying.
Oh, my God.
I'm just like, are you serious?
A common trend. I mean, you see it with, like, especially with Grace Kelly during the 50s. I mean,
oh,
she was
God.
Starring with Jimmy Stewart and
yep.
Cary Grant,
yep.
And Crosby.
Yep. You know? All these men who are like 10 times older than her.
Yeah.
Speaking of Grace Kelly, have you seen the photos of her backstage with Audrey at the Oscars?
Oh, yes.
I live for those iconic photos. Pictures. I live for those photos. Are you kidding me? I was like, ugh, the queens of Hollywood are meeting, and they are just adorable together, and I'm like, oh my God.
These two pillars of just, like, the epitome of elegance and class just meeting together, and they both look so happy to be together.
They just look so happy to be there, and I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
I'm just so blessed that they met, because somebody was like, I don't think Audrey ever met Grace, and I'm like, actually,
it's
sis,
like,
they did.
Up. They got the photographs.
Hold on, the life photographs, the Life magazine photographs from the 1950s. Yes, ma'am, they did. And you know what, girl? They were just so happy together, and they look so cute. And I'm like, yes, girl. They were talking and talking about class and elegance. And oh my God, I can't believe I'm working with Gary Cooper. Well, I can't believe I'm working with Bing Crosby. Jesus, like, what are we gonna do? Like, they were probably gossiping, going, girl, can you imagine? Girl, did you hear about this? Oh no, girl, tell me all about it. Spill the tea, like. They were probably having a grand old time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. So then she makes this really weird movie called Green Mansions? Mansions?
Green Mansions, yeah.
Green Mansions, thank you. It's weird.
It's definitely very offbeat for her. That's definitely when her first husband, Mel Ferrer, starts to take more control of her career.
Oh.
And, Yeah. He would sort of, I guess, quote-unquote, advise her, which, it's a little problematic. I don't
know. Yeah.
But, yeah, she makes this movie with Tony Perkins, and I guess to be more in tune with the nature of the film, she adopts a little deer.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, Audrey?
Yeah. I mean, who else, though? Who else would adopt a little deer and just, you know, claim it as their own? You know, it's very her. And she names it Ip.
Ip.
And also just something very Audrey, I think, you know. And the deer literally lives at home with them.
How? How does she? How? Audrey. Audrey.
I mean, who else but Audrey, though?
I can't think of Deanna Durbin ever doing that. I mean, literally. Just adopt a deer. Like, that's cool.
I think her dog, at the time, Mr. Famous, was just a tad bit jealous. Because up until then, he was kind of the king of the household, and then Ip comes into the picture and is like, well, guess who's here now?
Yeah, so when I'm watching Green Mansions, I'm like, what the hell am I watching, Audrey? I'm like, Audrey, it doesn't really have a plot.
Yeah.
And And Tony is just, I love Tony Perkins. I mean, for one thing, I love that man. God bless.
Oh, yeah.
Bless the man. I mean, he literally was trying, he was struggling in this movie. And I'm like, both of y'all, the chemistry isn't there. The movie sucks. What is going on? And it doesn't make them any money. It's a box office blow.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not the best. But what I love is that even in her less, like, successful films, she is that one quality in the film that makes it watchable.
Yes. You know? Absolutely.
It's like, even if the movie just sucks, it's not good. She's in it.
Yeah, that's, now listen, that's the only good part about it. I mean, seriously, if you think about it, she's like the only redeeming quality. I mean, Tony is great. Don't get me wrong. If you don't know who Tony Perkins is, I know half of y'all might have seen Psycho, duh. I mean, everybody has seen Psycho at least once. I've never seen Psycho, Kate. Well, you probably have, at least by the time I get done with this darn podcast. You'll probably, I'm surprised nobody's asked to talk about Tony Perkins yet. I mean, it's Halloween time, so.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised. Psycho actually...
Somebody I'd want to learn more about.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Tony loved working with Audrey. I mean, he had such good things to say about her. I mean, God bless her. Like, who wouldn't?
I remember seeing a photograph. It was of Tony Perkins, Fred Astaire, and Gregory Peck.
Oh.
And they're all in the same picture, and they all have these very tough, macho looks on their faces. They're all carrying guns, like rifles or something.
What?
And, yeah. It's pretty funny. Hold up. Let me see if I can pull it up, because I want to quote it right.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot Tony Perkins and Fred Astaire were in the same movie. Hold on.
They were?
On the beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's this picture, and... because they were all on the set of On the Beach, Fred Astaire, Gregory Peck, and Tony Perkins. And if it will pull up, let me see if I can find it. It's such a funny picture, if I'll ever get around to looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But they all look very tough and macho in this picture. They've all got these heavy artillery guns, because I guess the plot of On the Beach has to deal with that. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either, but I have yet to see it. If it has Gregory Peck, Tony Perkins, and Fred Astaire, I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the best leading men in Hollywood, I'm down. Yes, ma'am. You had me at Gregory Peck. I mean, I love that man, so.
There's a sign at the bottom of the picture that says, "Dear Audrey, if you need any help, call us."
Yes. So yes, funny. Sis. I would have loved to have, like, been one of those men, believe me. So then she goes on and she makes The Nun Story. Great movie.
Oh, yes.
This is the first time she plays a nun. And I think it's like, I think everybody was playing nuns at this point in the 50s. Like, Deborah Carr.
Very true.
Not Julie Andrews. She plays a nanny in The Sound of Music. I was like thinking of her as a nun in The Sound of Music, and I was like, no, it has nuns in it, but...
It's okay.
But she's not a nun. Oh, like, Deborah Carr was a nun. I'm trying to think
Black
who...
Narcissus.
Yeah, Black Narcissus. I'm trying to think who else was a nun. Like, I think they were all getting to the point where they were playing nuns at this point.
It was a big trend, yeah.
A big trend in the Catholic Church. I'm sure the Catholic Church was appreciative of it. They're like, oh, yes, look at them all playing nuns. Great. And I'm like, yep, sis, you got to be down for this. So she plays this nun, and it's a great movie, and it's really talking about, you know, mental health, and it's really, you know...
Wonderful film.
Absolutely. And didn't she get nominated for this movie? I know she gets nominated again.
She did, yeah.
Okay.
There's pictures of her opening up the letter and just this big expressive look on her face when she finds out she's been nominated. And it's a wonderful film, and definitely one of those where it shows her versatility.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like a lot of people... in general, I've heard people say, you know, she's not very versatile. She's, you know, in a lot of the same kind of movies. And I'm like, well, you haven't seen A Nun Story.
Yes, you haven't seen that.
And, I mean, she just embraces that role so well, just so naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just amazing to see her in, you know, such a different role, because, I mean, like, it's obviously, you know, a bit difficult to play a nun.
Yes.
Especially one like her character, Sister Luke, who's, mm-hmm. you know, has all these internal struggles. You know, she's constantly wondering, you know, if she's good enough, you know, if she's good enough to be in the medical field, if she's just good enough to be a nun in general. And, you know, you can see all of this through her performance, and she makes it look so natural, as if, like, she herself is experiencing all of these things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Great movie. Oh, Lord, have mercy. Oh! I'm like, yes, girl, you can play a nun and you can be believable. I mean,
she could play anything.
Yes. And then she goes on to make her first Western, which is The Unforgiven. I haven't mm-hmm. seen that all the way through, but what I have seen, I was like, girl.
A bit different. Yeah, during that film, very sad, she experienced one of her miscarriages.
Oh, yeah. Because I know her and Mel were trying for kids before Sean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for years. I think she had had one or two miscarriages before this. And, you know, in the movie, she, you know, it's a Western movie. She rides a horse.
Obviously. Yep, and she breaks her back, doesn't she? She gets thrown off the horse.
Coincidentally, the horse's name is Diablo.
Diablo. So,
yeah, and the horse throws her off, she breaks her back, and she has to be taken to the hospital. And I've seen pictures of her on the stretcher going up, you know, in the plane to be taken to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like nothing's wrong. Like, nothing is wrong. She just, you know, offers a smile, and I'm like, who else but you? You know, even in the face of just, you know, extreme, like, danger, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
She suffers this miscarriage, and I mean, she very well could have, you know, died herself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she just embraces it, you know? She doesn't let it tear her down once again.
Yeah. She, absolutely. And then we get to the most iconic movie she does that she will probably be only remembered for.
Yeah.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Now, if you talk about Audrey Hepburn, the first thing people will say, oh, Breakfast at Tiffany's. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That movie she makes for Paramount in 1961. Oh, yeah. And I've seen it. It's good. But it's not all that. It's not all that. I'm going to have to break it down for some of you big Audrey fans. And I know a lot of you Audrey fans are going to murder me and saying it's not her greatest movie. That would be funny face. But I'm just saying.
No, actually,
I'll get to her greatest movie. Hold on. I'll get to her greatest movie. Funny face is great, but I'll get to her greatest movie. And you'll probably agree with me on this one after Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's definitely a good movie. I wouldn't say it's wonderful, but it's not unwatchable.
Yeah.
I've read the book as well by Truman Capote.
Yeah.
And I mean, definitely the character is very different in the book
mm-hmm.
from the movie, but, there are so many aspects of the movie that are great, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
You have Henry Mancini, who composes the score.
Yes.
Literally my favorite, you know.
Harry Mancini is amazing. Yes, Harry Mancini is amazing.
I was literally listening to him in the car on my way to school today.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, he's iconic. You have this iconic score by Henry Mancini, and you have Audrey Hepburn.
Mm-hmm.
Alone in that movie, she's wonderful. Even, you know, if you don't, once again, if you don't care for the movie,
mm-hmm.
her performance in it is wonderful.
It is. She's adorable.
She plays a very interesting character. There's a mm-hmm. lot to unpack.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, the iconic wardrobe. Oh my goodness. Yep. I feel like that's probably what the general public remembers the most, you know, in association to that movie is, you know, the iconic wardrobe. Oh my gosh.
The iconic photo shoots, the iconic everything. It's definitely her most iconic film, I will say, especially if people are going to know anything about Audrey, because that's the only thing that people know her from, which is weird.
Yeah, that definitely gets me. It definitely bothers me when that is mainly the one thing they associate her with. It's like, she did so much more.
Yes.
Not only in terms of film, you know, she did so many better films.
Oh, but yeah.
So just as a person, you know?
Yeah.
She's very much stuck in this little girl in the black dress identity.
Yes.
Which
agree.
Is a shame.
Yes.
There's so much more about her that you could learn about. You know, she's mm-hmm. a role model.
She is. Absolutely. And now we get to her greatest film of all time. I'm just going to say this. You'll probably agree with me. The Children's Hour.
Oh, yes. That definitely one of my favorite movies of hers. It's iconic in so many different ways.
It broke a lot of barriers.
Definitely. I mean, a very taboo subject at the time. You didn't see too many movies, you know, talking about, you know, lesbian relationships and just lesbians in general.
No. Especially in the 60s. I mean, homosexuality was a big no-no in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. There was an original, because that was a remake.
Yes.
I think the original was called These Three.
These Three with Benita Granville, which I absolutely adore her in.
Yeah.
Benita's in it, Meryl O'Bron's in it, and Miriam Hopkins is in it, and Joe McCrea. And I'm telling, was it Joe McCrea? I think it was Joe McCrea. And I'm just going to say, my Lord, have mercy, Benita literally steals that film from underneath their noses. And I was like,
of course, all right.
Well, Benita's good in anything she does, so I'm just going to say that now.
Definitely.
But, you know,
in that version, you know, they can't talk about it.
No.
But in this, it broke so many barriers, you know?
Yes.
They're talking about it so openly, you know? And which had really never really been done, especially in, like, you know, Hollywood cinema.
No.
You know, you'll see movies like Girls in Uniform. I don't know the pronunciation of the German title, but with Romy Schneider and Lily Palmer.
Yeah.
And you know, that explores it, and then there's Lily and was it Lily? Oh, wait a minute. Or Olivia, I think it was. In 1951, which also explores aspects of, you know, lesbian relationships. But yeah, this one, it was definitely an iconic film, and it opened up, you know, so many different conversations that people were afraid to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading that there were a lot more scenes that had been filmed showcasing aspects of their character's relationship that was a bit more intimate, you know, as intimate as you could get at the time in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
But and they still wanted those scenes in the film, Audrey and Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah.
They wanted those scenes in the film, but the director was like, you know what, I think we'd be pushing too many buttons with these. But it just kills me because I'm like, I want to see these deleted scenes.
Same.
We need this. But a very good adaptation of the play.
They were both nominated. I know that. Mm-hmm. They didn't win, sadly.
I think the film won, was it Best Soundtrack or something?
They won something. I know that. But it wasn't. None of the awards that mattered, they won.
Yeah, it wasn't a very big award, I remember.
Sadly.
It probably wasn't Best Soundtrack because that was the year West Side Story came out, so yeah.
Yeah. No, it didn't win any big things, I know that.
No.
But I know they were both nominated. I know that they were absolutely thrilled. The movie made amazing money for Paramount. I mean, it was ironically a smashing success. even though they were slating it not to be, because they were like, oh no, what about the Hays Code and all this? Because, you know, there was still, like, codes and everything for this. So they definitely were tripping on pins and needles for this.
You know, of course, but, like, the vaguest codes ever.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, it, I mean, if...
some buttons with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get into Audrey Hepburn, please find this movie. In your leisure time, please find it. It is so...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you can find it on rk.org. I'm sure it's there. So,
oh, yeah.
if y'all don't want to go out and be a citizen and buy it, or on Amazon Prime it, because, well, just go watch it. It's so amazingly good.
Also, just brace yourself. Oh, my God.
It's a hard... I mean, it really attests because these three, when it was first made in 1936, talked about premarital sex. That's what it talked about. Because they couldn't necessarily... It didn't go with the play initially. I mean, it tried to go with the play. But the Children's Hour, it went directly with the play.
Yeah.
Like, word for word. Like, they used the play. They used it. And they were like, all right, sis. This is what's happening.
Definitely.
Just grab Audrey Hepburn and Shirley MacLaine and we're good to go.
Yeah, for real. And, yeah. It very good adaptation of the play. I think it builds upon it in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely like what Audrey does with her character, because it's a little bit different, her character development, especially at the end of the film versus the end of the play, which, I mean, I won't say anything in case anybody wants to watch it, but she definitely showed a lot more emotion at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell, you know, exactly what was going through her mind, as opposed to the play. Well, when I read it, just her character Karen was just very stone-faced, just emotionless, numb.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, well, Breakfast at Tiffany's good, but the Children's Hour is great. I mean...
Oh, yeah. World's better, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a movie that a lot of people, even though the kid actresses do tend to steal the picture from...
like the adult co-stars.
The adult co-stars, yes. Karen Balkin and Veronica Kane, not Veronica Kane, what is her name? Veronica Cartwright, I'm sorry, Cartwright,
yeah.
There we go, Veronica Kane's a different story.
Cartwright's
sister. Yes, they absolutely steal this picture, but Audrey does an amazing job as well. So
everybody holds their own in that film.
Yes.
You know, nobody really overshadows anybody.
Yes. So that's why when I was like, okay, this, I remember watching these three and I was like, oh, Benita's fabulous. Because you know what? I am a Benita whore. Everybody knows that. I know her daughter. I mean,
I'm number one fan.
Yes, literally. I've seen almost all of her work. So when I was like, really? When I got into Audrey when I was little, I remember it came on TCM one time. And I was like, oh, but I didn't really understand what the movie was about at first until I rewatched it when I got older. And I was like, oh, snap. And I was like, damn, sis, this is a drama. This is a drama.
Yeah. I remember when my mom watched it for the first time, I was with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned it off after it was done and just sat in silence for like a minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, wow. And
yeah.
I was like, I know, right?
Yeah. Moving along, she makes Charade and Paris When It Sizzles. Two good movies. They're not great. They're just okay.
Yeah. I definitely prefer Charade better.
Yes.
You know, she's paired with Cary Grant.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Absolutely.
I remember reading after the filming was all said and done, Cary Grant had said, the only thing I want for Christmas is to do another film with Audrey Hepburn.
Oh. Well, at least they were good together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then she makes My Fair Lady. Have you seen this version?
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, good. Okay, well, she is dubbed in this movie.
She is, yes, by Marnie Nixon.
And I know that Audrey was heartbroken.
Oh, my goodness. Well, because nobody had thought to tell her that yeah. she was going to be dubbed. She went through all these rehearsals, and she had specific, like, vocal training.
Yeah.
So that she could strengthen her voice, and then at the end she's told, oh, well, we're going to use Marnie to dub your voice. And that was the only time that she stormed off set. She left. And I mean, rightfully so.
Absolutely. Especially when you were, like, rehearsing and everything, and you're, like, getting ready to do this movie, and you're preparing, and you're just like, well, you know what? And they finally tell you, they're like, well, you know what? We're just going to use Marnie Nixon. Are you fucking serious? Are you fucking kidding? Girl, I would have been like, are you fucking kidding? No, ma'am. I have spent way too much time, way too much money, and way too much energy trying to do this damn picture. I'm surprised she didn't leave the damn movie.
Yeah, so she storms off the set, and then the next day comes back and apologizes for her behavior.
Oh.
I'm like, girl, you are completely justified to act that way.
Yes.
That is terrible, because they did that so much back then. You know, they did it with Natalie Wood.
Yep.
And Side Story, also with Marnie Nixon.
Yep.
I want to say it was done with Joan Crawford in Torch Song.
Yep.
And I don't think with that one, I don't think she was told at all. Like, she found out at the premiere of the movie.
Oh, snap.
She had been dubbed. I could be wrong, but I want to say that's what happened.
Oh,
she wasn't
snap.
Told at all.
No. And, you know, ironically, so let me give you a little bit backstory on My Fair Lady real quick. It was originally done on Broadway, and originally Deanna Durbin was slated to do it. And I was like, yes, girl, I'm ready. I'm ready for My Fair Lady.
Goodness.
Yes, ma'am, I'm ready. And then she turns, and then last minute she goes, oh, I can't do it. And I go, Deanna, are you serious?
I could definitely, I mean, her vocal range was so phenomenal. I could definitely, you know, hear her singing all these songs and doing it with, you know, great success.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, I'm like, you know, this is definitely what got Julie on the map.
Yeah. So instead, because Charles David, and I will never forgive Charles David for this, he goes, I know what this industry does to you. Do not do it. So she doesn't. So, but anyway, she says, but Julie and Audrey were great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, of course they were great. So Julie Andrews does this on Broadway. She does it for like 2 years, 2-3 years. It's great. And then Paramount says, we're going to make it into a movie. And who better not to do it than Audrey freaking Hepburn?
Yeah.
The problem is she's working with Rex Harrison, and that's a big issue.
Yeah, he's definitely, he was known as a bit of a nightmare to work with. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, a wonderful actor. You know, he's been in some great movies, but
yeah,
like a tyrant to work with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, I remember him, you know, having, you know, pretty good things to say about Audrey, and seem, you know, to get along based on pictures and things like that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
A bit controversial, especially when they don't even use, you know, Audrey's voice in the movie.
Nope.
For the songs.
Nope. Nope.
But, yeah.
Nope.
But, you
it's
know,
a, such a disappointment because Audrey could sing.
She could.
She sang in Funny Face.
She did. I definitely think she definitely could sing. I wouldn't say professionally. You know, I don't think she can make a career out of singing solely. You know, she sang in Breakfast at Tiffany's and Funny Face.
Yeah.
I've heard some recordings of her, you know, in rehearsals for My Fair Lady. And it was kind of along the same lines of, like, Natalie Wood and West Side Story. Like, they were decent, but both of their voices definitely weren't strong enough.
No.
To be able to carry themselves within, you know, throughout all of those songs. Which, I mean, granted, they're not easy songs to sing.
No, no. Especially, I've seen, I did My Fair Lady in high school. I know how difficult those songs were. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did Eliza Doolittle. I know what it's like. You have to have a 4-octave range to mm-hmm. sing those songs. And that's why I was like, Deanna Durbin, why didn't you do it, sis? I'm gonna be salty about that for the rest of my days.
Oh, yeah.
Girl, could you?
Julie had the range, I mean, vocally.
Yes.
You know, she was definitely more experienced. I mean, she had done the role on Broadway for quite some time.
Yep.
You know, also at the same time, I'm like, you know, but if she had done that, then there probably wouldn't have been The Sound of Music with, you know, Julie Andrews.
Right. So. And originally she was supposed to do the movie version of My Fair Lady, but something happened in contract or something. I don't know what, but couldn't do it. I think it was The Sound of Music that was being made at the same time.
Yeah, Sound of Music, Mary Poppins and Sound of Music were like back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, she really got hammered in right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, two successes, you know, year after year.
The movie is a great success. She makes this great film. I mean, it's adorable. It's 3 hours long. It's long.
Definitely a long movie. I mean,
so if you have the time, sit through it.
Mm-hmm.
Say what?
It was typical of the time, you know, that mid-century musical. They were all pretty lengthy. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, definitely a good movie. Very good.
Yes.
And, you know, Audrey's acting in it definitely makes up for the fact that she's not singing really in it.
No. And I know she was heartbroken by it. I know she was.
Because she wanted to do everything, you know? She mm-hmm. wanted, you know, to prove herself.
And, yeah.
You know, shows she was capable of doing all of these different things.
But she's in it, and that's what matters.
Yeah, of course.
So, let's talk about these marriages real quick. Because I know they were both kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to be very candid. I do not care for either of her husbands.
She married how many times? Three?
Two times.
Two.
But she was involved with Robert Walters towards the end of her life. It was like the last 12 years. And they weren't legally married or anything, but she definitely considered it a marriage in her mind.
Okay.
That was definitely the happiest she was in terms of relationships. She was engaged to James Hansen in the early 1950s, mm-hmm. but she kind of got cold feet as the wedding approached. She kind of decided it wasn't the wisest idea to marry him,
mm-hmm.
so they don't get married. And then she meets Mel Ferrer through Gregory Peck, actually.
Oh.
The party that he hosts. Yeah, he hosts a party, and they're introduced to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, I just saw you in this movie, Lily, with Leslie Caron. I thought you were wonderful. And they eventually go to be in the play On Dean together.
Mm-hmm.
And which I wish there was footage of somewhere, because I would love to see that. And they get married in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Mel was very controlling in terms of her career, especially in terms of her career.
Great.
Yeah. You know, the typical Hollywood husband. She was obviously vastly more successful than he was.
Absolutely. And should be, too. Just saying, he's a little boring.
He had a pretty lackluster career.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Didn't make too many wonderful films. I mean, there were a couple of good ones.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing in which he definitely stood out in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very controlling for career, you know. And he had a temper. And I remember reading, even Yul Brynner, who Audrey was very good friends with, had said, let me get this right. He was saying that Mel was jealous of her success and could not reconcile himself to the fact that she was much better than her, that she was much better than he in every way, so he took it out on her.
Jerk.
Yeah, he was a bit of a jerk. I mean, the marriage was successful in some ways. You know, she did get her first child through that marriage, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen baby photos with her and him?
Oh my God, they're adorable.
Have you seen, girl, literally the first photos of her holding him as a baby, I'm just sitting here sobbing. I'm like, she is a mom. Move over, Audrey, the actor. She is mom, Audrey.
Yeah, which is definitely a role she embraced wholeheartedly.
Yeah, she wanted to be a mom.
Mm-hmm. And I remember reading, you know, Sean saying, you know, they did have some happier times, the two of them, like romantic mm-hmm. evenings. You know, mm-hmm. you could tell they were in love, and mm-hmm. she adored him, mm-hmm. but he could not handle the fact that his wife was more successful than he was.
Oh, God. Von Paul who? Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It was just, it's terrible, really.
Deanna had this issue with her first husband, Von. Mm-hmm. And because Von got initially fired from his job because, you know, he, quote unquote, became her manager, which I don't know why. Deanna, you were not the smartest human being to make that decision. I don't know why.
It's the worst day.
Yes. Oh, Lord. Anyway, so she was making the money, honey, and she was bringing home the bacon. And what was he doing? Probably nothing much. But it just made him so incredibly jealous that he just took out of all of his anger on her. And I'm just like, man, I'm just like, Vaughn, what is your problem? But anyway, back to Audrey and Mel. Dear God, the woman was like trying to be a mom, trying to handle her career, and yet you're having this dickhead on top of it? No, sir. I mean,
exactly.
Ugh!
You know, and she just craved that, you know, fairy tale love and romance, you know?
Yeah.
Because she was deprived of a lot of affection when she was growing up, you know?
Yeah.
Her father left very early on.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother was very reserved. They didn't really have the best relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, it was stable, but it was by no means a very close or personal relationship.
Yeah, so I know Audrey was a very loving mom. I know what Sean wouldn't have written a book if she wasn't.
Definitely. Definitely the best mom. I remember somebody had asked me, you know, who would you rather Audrey be in your life? Like, your best friend or your mom? And I was like, well, yeah, she'd be the best mother.
Yeah.
You know? But, so they divorce in 1968. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was like right after Wait Until Dark. And then she meets Andrea Doughty, who is 10 years younger than she.
What?
Yeah. And they marry in 1969.
Uh-huh.
And he was a psychiatrist, an Italian psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And they were married for a little while. She has more miscarriages.
Mm.
I can't remember if it was one more or two more. And then she has Luca mm-hmm. in, that was 1970, I believe. Yes. And once again, I mean, Andrea Doughty was not very good to her. He cheated on her.
Great.
And I want to say he was having an affair with one of her co-stars on the set of Bloodline.
Oh, shit. 70s. Oh, my God.
Once again, just not a good match, you know? And, of course, you know, she was an adoring wife.
Yes. She loved Luca.
Yeah. The love was just not reciprocated. And, but once again, you know, wonderful mom, and never let those concerns affect the relationship she had with her children,
mm-hmm.
which is wonderful, you know. And by the 70s, she's slowly backing out of films. She's not doing as much.
Yeah.
And she's embracing motherhood even mm-hmm. more.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, alone is like a full-time job.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
So then she, after they divorce in 1982, she starts seeing Robert Walters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I was saying, finally she has success when it comes to love. And she considered it like the happiest times. She considered the union, you know, even though it wasn't legally a marriage, she considered it a marriage in her mind. So, you know, finally she had some love in her life because she really, really needed it.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, she just wasn't receiving any properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either she was being cheated on or her husband was extremely jealous of her career and couldn't handle that. But, you know, I'm always happy to hear that when I read stories about their relationship towards the end, her and Robert, that she was happy, definitely more happy in, like, the relationship, and she was just more confident in herself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but definitely her husband did not treat her very well at all.
No. And I think that's what this new documentary is going to divulge into, I feel like.
Good.
I feel that's what it seems like, because it's like, I don't know if her son's being interviewed or not. I would love to see what her sons look like, if they ever look like. I don't know who her sons. I mean, her sons kind of look a little bit like the husbands. They don't look anything like her, God bless. But, you know, but Sean wrote this amazing book called Audrey Hepburn,
An Elegant Spirit.
And it's so, please find it. I know your local library or your Barnes and Nobles have it. I know they do.
You bet that I bought it the minute I got, I think I was maybe 13 or 14 at the time, but as soon as I got that Barnes & Noble gift card for Christmas,
yeah.
I was at my Barnes & Noble getting that book and just diving into it.
It's beautiful. It's a really beautiful, it is a beautiful book. And Sean, you know, I would love to reach out to her kids. I really would. I just have no idea how to go about doing it.
Yeah, either her sons, which I don't think her sons are on the best of terms with each other. I don't think. I remember reading, at least when I read it, which was a couple years ago, I don't think they were on the best of terms. But I know her granddaughter has become a little bit popular in the public eye. She did that photo shoot a couple years ago that was very Audrey-esque.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know she's got grandkids.
Yeah, I want to say she's involved in UNICEF as well.
Yes, because Audrey, I don't want to say established it, but she definitely worked a lot with UNICEF. And, you know, when I was a kid, I did donations for UNICEF in Audrey's name, because I was like, that's the only person that I really think that, you know, even with all of her movie work, she was such a charitable person. Like, she cared for children.
She went
to Africa. She went to Nairobi. She went to all these places where these kids are literally dying. And she was like, look, world, we got to help.
Yeah, I mean, and it harkens back to her own experiences during World War II, you know, on the verge of death. And then UNICEF at the time comes and helps them out. Or I think it was Red Cross.
Yeah.
Red Cross. But, you know, an organization like that. And then she, you know, she's reminded of all these experiences that she went through at such a young age and naturally does not want that to happen to anybody else. You know, she believed, you know, children should have, you know, a happy childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just shows how full her heart was and how selfless she was, because she didn't have to do all that. And
yeah.
Be as involved as she was. You know, she could just have made, like, yearly, you know, contributions to the organization, or, you know, just signed a check and, you know, posed for some pictures. But she went to all these places and helped out these children.
Yeah.
It just shows how big her heart was. Definitely one of her qualities that I admire greatly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she develops cancer, I think.
Yes. When she was abroad with UNICEF, I think she was in Somalia, I want to say.
Uh-huh.
She starts to develop some abdominal pains.
Mm-hmm.
And she ignores them. You know, she wants to help out with UNICEF. Once again, I mean, just showing how selfless she is. Like, she's literally developing, you know, a deadly disease, and she's like, nope, we need to help out these kids.
Yeah.
So she goes home and finds out that She has a rare form of abdominal cancer.
Mm.
And she is given chemotherapy, but it really does not help that much. Mm-hmm. She was diagnosed with it, I want to say, in 1992.
Yeah, she dies in 93 that next year.
Dies in 93, yes. She receives chemotherapy, but her health just declined.
Yeah.
She's brought back to her home in, I'm trying to remember where it was.
Switzerland?
Yes.
I think it was Switzerland where she was living.
Yeah, I want to say. I'm trying to remember the home. Beautiful home.
I've seen
a lot of pictures of it. Filled with, you know, tons of gardens, which, you know, she tended to every day. And, yeah, I'm looking at these pictures. And she goes back home. I think Givenchy arranges for her to be flown home.
Yeah.
With, like, a team of, like, medical professionals because she can't do it on her own.
Yeah. So, where are her sons at this point? That's my question.
They were... I know Sean definitely was with her.
Okay, good. I was gonna make sure. I was like, where are her children?
I want to say Doris Brenner was there, too.
Okay.
Yul Brenner's second wife, who was a very close friend of hers. And okay. She's brought back home for her last Christmas. And she's, you know, deteriorating.
Right, because she dies in January of that next year.
Yeah, she dies January 20th in 1993.
Oh.
Heartbreaking. I mean, everybody is heartbroken, especially, you know, Gregory Peck. Mm-hmm. He recites a poem of hers shortly after she dies. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's very touching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the funeral, all of her friends and co-stars show up. It's, you know, a big turnout.
Yeah.
But she dies in her sleep, you know, very peaceful. She, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously she was in pain from the cancer, but mm-hmm. she died, you know, relatively peacefully, mm-hmm. just in her sleep. But,
yeah, but Audrey seems to, like, live on. She's in commercials. She's,
oh, yeah, definitely.
She's on posters. She's on everything.
Lives on in so many different ways. And is very, very, very present in the public eye, even now, mm-hmm. you know? I really am excited for this documentary that's coming out. It's kind of a coincidence that it, you know, the trailer previewed yesterday and we're doing this interview today.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it will definitely shed some light on her life and aspects of her life that the public doesn't really know that much about. You know, once again, like we were talking about earlier, she's very much cemented as that girl in the black dress,
mm-hmm.
you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's. She's regarded as a fashion icon, which she mm-hmm. was.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It definitely changed the name of the game.
Absolutely.
It is with fashion, you know.
Yes.
You had women like Elizabeth Taylor and Ava Gardner dominating sort of, you know, the ultimate woman, that image. And then she comes along and, you know, she's tiny. She's not, you know, she doesn't have that, like, signature hourglass figure. You know, she's mm-hmm. got cropped hair. She's got these big, thick eyebrows. She's very, you know, nymph. Looking
mm-hmm.
and just changes the name of the game for fashion.
Yeah,
we know. I mean, you still see aspects of her style today.
Yeah,
but she definitely needs to be remembered for more than just her breakfast. Style.
More than Breakfast at Tiffany's. That's what I keep trying to tell people. I'm like, she did Funny Face. She did The Children's Hour. She did all these great ass movies, and you're just talking about one.
Until Dark. She did Wait
Until Dark. Oh, we should have talked about that one, girl. Oh my God. She plays a blind woman. She plays a blind woman. Number one, so she mm-hmm. plays with somebody with a disability. Number two, it's like a mystery.
Oh, yeah, suspense thriller, and what I loved about it was, you know, once again, just displaying, you know, how far she was willing to go to portray something realistically. She didn't want to wear darkened glasses,
mm-hmm.
or, like, sort of cloudy eye contacts to make her appear blind. She went and visited people in the hospital who were blind and observed their actions and, you know, learned from what they did to help craft her role. But, you know, once again, showing her versatility, which I wish she was remembered for.
She's
such a versatile actress. And definitely, I mean, just her character in general. She was so compassionate and passionate in general. And very loving and selfless. You know, she's definitely somebody you can look to.
Yeah.
You know, definitely is a role model for so many different reasons, and those definitely being big ones for me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, she's just so selfless and kind, you know, just a wonderful role model to so many different people, you know, a wonderful mother and big heart. I just wish people would see that side of her, and I'm hoping with this documentary.
Yeah, I'm hoping to. It looks good. It looks good. I saw it yesterday, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be good.
But
well, yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Megan. It was so great. Oh, of course. Well, thank you for joining us. Yes, well, thank you for joining us on this episode of Movie Magic, and we will see you next time.